And now would you please open your Bibles to the book of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, chapter 12. I want to just take, one verse for the text of our lesson. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 7. Just briefly set the context. The great wise man Solomon is describing old age in verses 1 through 6. Particularly extreme old age, shortly before a person dies, and the debilities that come. They're a very, very beautiful, poetic description of old age. And then the end result of that is shown in Ecclesiastes 12, verse 7. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. A lot of the people in this audience are already retired. That's kind of the nature of Baxter County. Some of you have not yet retired, and I'm sure that those of you who have not yet retired are looking forward to the day when you can retire and planning what you're going to do. But in order to do that, of course, you have to save, and you have to put things aside and make plans of how you may have to live on a little bit less when you're no longer actively working. And all kinds of plans and preparations have to be made before you can retire. But there's something more important than planning for retirement, and that's planning for what's going to happen. Now, we hope that everybody here lives long enough to enjoy retirement or to have retirement, but something's going to follow that. And it's going to follow for every one of us. We're going to have to die. And we need to make preparation for that. There's a fellow that we read about in 2 Samuel chapter 17, verse 23, who thought that he was making preparation for death. This man's name is Ahithophel. Maybe you've never heard of Ahithophel. But he had been an advisor to King David, and he was a brilliant counselor, brilliant advisor. And it said of the counsel, the advice of Ahithophel, that it was as the counsel of God. He just always knew the best thing to do. When Absalom, the son of King David, rebelled against his father David and claimed the throne from him, Ahithophel was not loyal to David, but became a counselor to King Absalom. Or actually, Absalom, of course, was the false king. And he gave Absalom advice that was good advice from the standpoint of the wicked plans of Absalom. But David was shrewd also, and he had another advisor by the name of Hushai. And Hushai also was a good counselor. And Hushai wanted to go with David as he fled from Absalom. But David said, "You'll be no good to me. You just be in the way. You stay here behind. And you become a counselor to Absalom, and you defeat the counsel of Ahithophel." And I'll shorten the story. That's what Hushai did. He persuaded to Absalom not to follow the advice of Ahithophel, but to follow his own advice, which, by the way, led to the death of Absalom. And apparently Ahithophel was smart enough to know that's what was going to happen. And so when his advice was not followed, he went back to his home village of Gilo. And it says in 2 Samuel chapter 17, verse 23, Ahithophel set his affairs in order. Now, I'd like to think about living at several hundred years, a thousand years before the time of Christ. What did it mean to set his affairs in order? Maybe he did have a will. And he had to make sure that will was brought up to date and everything was the way he wanted it. And he undoubtedly had property. As an Israelite, he would own property. And he would have to see that someone after him was going to see for that property. And maybe even was good enough in this sense that he made arrangements for the care of his widowed wife after his death. And all of those things. But if you think, now that is making preparation for death. And that's something that still financial advisors will advise people how to do, is make preparation for when you're not here anymore And how's your family going to be cared for? And how's your property going to be disposed of? But if you stop and think about it, that's only making preparation for the folks that are left behind. That's not making preparation for yourself. And I'll guarantee you, Ahithophel made no preparation for himself in his own death. He couldn't, because he committed suicide. He hung himself. How does somebody who commits suicide make preparation for himself after his own death, when he has guaranteed that his soul is going to be lost by the way that he departs this life? And so Ahithophel, as a wise man in this world, made preparation for death, but as an ungodly man, he was not prepared for death. Well, we need to make preparation for death, because one thing we know, we're going to die. So we're going to ask this question. By the way, this is a question that was posed in a Monday night class that I teach on a fairly regular basis about, all right, what's going to happen to us after we die? All right, I'm going to center in on this. This is a focused lesson on not after Christ returns. That's not what this lesson is about. We'll talk about that in another lesson. When Christ returns, what then? But the question of this lesson is, all right, when we die and before Christ returns, what then? Well, that's what I want to talk about in this lesson. All right, first of all, this is a lesson that we all need to know about, because we're all going to die. And I hope that you're honest enough with yourself to realize that, yes, there's coming a time when I also am going to die. I started to say your time is coming, but I don't like that statement. Because some people have the idea that God has picked a time and you're going to die regardless of it. I don't believe the Bible teaches that. If I believe the Bible teaches that, I would just go right out and walk right down the middle of Highway 5 and not worry about being run over, because when it's my time, it's my time. That's nonsense. That's not true. But rather, it is also true, it is true, that we're all going to die. In Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27, in talking about the death of Jesus, this is what the inspired writer is leading to, that he died once for us. He says, and as it is appointed to men once to die, and after this the judgment. Now, by the fact that it's appointed doesn't mean there's a specific time and that you're going to die when your time comes. That's not the point. The point is that death is your appointment, that you're going to die. And of course, if Christ returns before we die, then that's the possible exception. Paul talks about that in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, beginning of verse 13, down through verse 18. But unless Christ returns before we die, then all of us are going to die. We don't know when that time is, but all of us are going to die. And so we need to be prepared for that. Well, all right, when that time comes, what's going to happen to us when we die? After death, what then? Well, to begin with, it's the body that's going to decay. There is a spirit within you made in the image of God. We talked about that last week, about what we're like, the fact we're made in God's image. And being made in God's image, we have a spirit within. That spirit within does not die. It does not cease to exist. It does not fall asleep. That spirit within continues to exist. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 7, again, speaking of death, then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Now, the Jehovah's Witnesses teach that man does not have a soul. Man is a soul. And that when you die, you're like the little dog Rover, you're dead all over. That's just it. You just cease to exist. And that's not true. This passage plainly teaches that, yes, this body is going to die and it's going to decay. But you and I have within us, as each of us has within us, a spirit made in the image of God. And that spirit was given to us by God. We talked about that last time, that though we get our physical bodies from our parents, and we reflect physically and even intellectually, we reflect what our parents' bodies were like, but the spirit within is put within each individual. That spirit within is put within us by God himself. He is the Father of our spirits, as this inspired writer says in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 9. And since that spirit was placed there by God, when we die, the spirit doesn't die. The spirit returns to God. And the spirit remains conscious during that time after the body is not conscious and it is decayed. In Luke chapter 16, and I'm just going to tell this. I've got this written out somewhere. No, it's not here. In Luke chapter 16, beginning in verse 19, it's the story of the rich man and Lazarus. And by the way, the Jehovah's Witnesses try to get around this by calling it a parable. It doesn't make any difference if it is a parable. I don't believe there's evidence that it is. But it doesn't make any difference if it is a parable, because parables are stories about things that could have happened. That's things in the natural realm, and this is not of the natural realm, that could have happened but did not actually happen, to illustrate something in the spiritual realm. This is a story about something in the spiritual realm, and so whether it actually occurred or could have occurred, it still tells us something about the spiritual realm. And so this is something that tells us about the conditions of our spirits after we die. There was a certain rich man who fared sumptuously every day, clothing in purple and fine linen. There was laid at the entrance to his house a poor beggar by the name of Lazarus. And it says that Lazarus died and was carried by angels to Abraham's bosom. That simply means a place of blessedness. Abraham is the father of the Israelite nation. To be in his bosom, the place of greatest honor. Though Lazarus was a poor beggar in this life, after he died, he was in a place of the greatest of honor, leaning back on Abraham in the feast of the saved. And of course, this is figurative, and it's spiritual. But it says the rich man died and was buried. And in torment, being in torments in Hades, we'll talk about more about all of this later, he lifted up his eyes and seeing Lazarus afar off in Abraham's bosom, said, Father Abraham, send Lazarus that he may dip his finger in water and put it to my tongue, for I'm tormented in this flame. And what I want us to learn from that is, number one, both Lazarus and the rich man, after they died, their spirits were conscious. They knew what was going on. Well, does that mean, since we're conscious, that when we die, we're looking down on this world? You know, how many times have you heard in a funeral, oh, so-and-so, you know, he's in heaven, and he's looking down on his family, and he's loving his family. I don't want to look down on my family after I'm gone. I don't know what my family might be doing that I don't want them to do, okay? I don't want to, you know, everybody has family problems, things we don't like that go on. And I don't want to have to worry about those things after I'm dead and gone. By the way, that's not what the Bible teaches anyway. No, don't worry. Those people who die are not looking down from heaven, and they're not in heaven anyway. See more about that later. They're not looking down from paradise and seeing, and they're not interfering in things here. They're not going around as a ghost somewhere on this earth, you know, interfering in things. All of that is nonsense that is taken from the Catholic Church, and there's not a word of truth to it. In Ecclesiastes chapter 9, again, this is Solomon, and there's a very important phrase at the end of this, which is the theme of the book of Ecclesiastes. It tells us about when we die. It says, for the living know that we will die, or they will die, but the dead know nothing. Was that teaching soul sleeping? There's a phrase at the end of this that qualifies all of it. And that's the important phrase. The dead know nothing, and they have no more reward. Well, so is there no reward after this life? There's a phrase we're going to get to. That's the key. For the memory of them is forgotten. Now, if you think that you're important, you just keep that in mind. There's coming a time when nobody on this earth is going to remember you. Do you remember your grandparents? Yes. Do you remember your great-grandparents? I have one great-grandparent that I remember. What about your great-great-grandparents? Forget it. Now, if you've looked at your genealogy, you may know their names, but anything you know about them, you read somewhere. or you heard a grandparent talking about it. You don't know them. And eventually, though, you're going to be forgotten. I'm going to be forgotten. People will, for 100 years from now, people will not even know there was somebody named Keith Sharp who lived in Mountain Home, Arkansas. In fact, maybe 10 years after I'm gone, people won't even know there was a guy named Keith Sharp that lived in, and nor will anybody care that there was such a person who lived on this earth. You're going to be forgotten on this earth, and so am I. Also, their love, their hatred, their envy have now perished. Nevermore will they have any share in anything. And then the operative phrase that explains it all. Under the sun. That means life here on this earth on the part of the living. The dead don't know what's going on this earth. They don't have any part in anything that happens on this earth. When we're gone, that's over with. When we're dead, everything on this earth, as far as we are concerned, that's in the past. We have no more contact with those things, and that's true forevermore. And in case you're worried about it, women, there's not going to be any marriage after we're dead and gone. First of all, and this contradicts Mormon doctrine that teaches eternal marriage. I won't say any more about that for sake of time. But in Romans chapter 7, verses 1 through 2, or do you not know, brethren, for I speak to those who know the law, that the law has dominion over man as long as he lives. Death ends our being amenable to law. That's the point that he's making. For the woman who has a husband is bound by the law to her husband as long as he lives. But if her husband dies, she is loose from the law of her husband. Husbands, don't tell your wives what they need to do after you're dead and gone. That's their decision. You have no control of what's going to happen in their lives after you're dead and gone. That is up to the wife. She's loosed from the law to her husband when the husband dies. Marriage is a relationship. It's a fleshly relationship. It is for this life only. And when death of one of the spouses occurs, that ends the marriage relationship. And the one that survives is free to get married. And don't ask your husband, honey, if I die, will you marry somebody else? Well, if you can find somebody else, he will. Of course he will if he can. Don't ask. By the way, husband, don't ask your wife that. That's up to them. It's their decision. It's over with. When death occurs, marriage ends. And don't worry about finding somebody in heaven to marry. It ain't going to happen either. There is no marriage in heaven. In Matthew chapter 22, verses 23 through 30, the Sadducees who do not believe in the resurrection, this is a trick question they asked Jesus, because they believe that there is no resurrection from the dead. And they came to Jesus and said, Teacher, there was a man who had a wife, and he was one of seven brothers. And this man died. And you know, Moses said in the law, and they had no children. And Moses said in the law, if a man dies having no child, then his brother is to marry his wife and raise up seed to his dead brother. That's so that land could be inherited by lineage. And so he married his brother's wife, and he died, and they had no children. And that went all the way through seven brothers. So seven men had been married to one woman. and in the resurrection, who shall she be? For they all had her. Now, that's a pretty tough question if you believe in marriage in heaven, isn't it? Who's that woman going to be married to in heaven? She had seven husbands. And Jesus said, the old King James, you greatly err, not knowing the scriptures nor the power of God. And then he said, for in heaven, they are like the angels of God, neither marrying nor being given in marriage. There's no marriage in heaven. That's over with. That's a fleshly thing for this life alone. When this life ends, marriage is over with. So don't have to worry about that. And women, you don't have to worry about being in subjection to a man in heaven. So if that's of any consolation whatsoever. All right. What happens after we die? After we die, our spirits will enter a place that's called Hades. We talked about this in Luke 16, 19 through 26. And I'm just going to go through this again. We've already talked about in Hades, in torment, the rich man lifted up his eyes. He was in Hades. Now, the word Hades, and by the way, if you have the old King James Version, it has the word hell instead of the word Hades. And that's, now, I like the old King James Version very much. But that's an unfortunate translation of the old King James Version. Hell and Hades are not the same. Hell is the place of eternal punishment. Hades, and it's from the word Gehenna. And that's not the word here. It's the word Hades, which simply means the unseen. And that's all it is. It's the realm of the unseen. When a person dies, have you ever been present when a person died? Okay. Then you can see the body is there. And the body obviously is no longer responsive. And their eyes are set, and you have to close their eyes. But the body's there. But where's the spirit? You can't see the spirit. It's gone. But where? What? It's unseen. And that's where the word Hades comes from. It's the realm of the unseen. And so when we die, our spirits enter the realm of the unseen. Now, the rich man was a place that's called torment. And he was tormented, he says, in this flame. So there's a place in Hades, the realm of the unseen, that's called torment. But not only is there a realm in Hades called torment, there's a realm in Hades called paradise. In Acts chapter 2, verses 30 and 31, Peter is talking about the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. He says, therefore, being a prophet, that is David, and knowing that God had sworn with an oath to him that the fruit of his body according to the flesh would raise up the Christ to sit on this throne. He, seeing this, spoke concerning the resurrection of Christ, that his soul, now this he's talking about in Psalm 110, or as soul was not, Psalm 16, excuse me. His soul was not left in Hades, nor did his flesh see corruption. Now, by the way, that separates the body and the soul, doesn't it? His body, Jesus' body, did not see corruption. He was only in the grave, 3 days Jewish way of telling time. Nowhere close to that the way we would tell time. But his body was in, but not long enough to corrupt. And his soul did not remain in Hades. So Jesus' soul went to Hades, but it did not remain there. You with me so far? Well, where did Jesus go when he died? So far as his soul, so far as his spirit. Look at Luke 23, verse 43. In Luke chapter 23, verse 43, Jesus said to the thief on the cross, assuredly I say to you, this day you will be with me in paradise. Now Jesus' soul went to the place that's called Hades in Acts 2. But he promised the thief on the cross, today your soul will be with me in paradise. So there's a realm within the unseen, within Hades, that's called paradise. And that's where Jesus and the thief on the cross were after Jesus died and after the thief on the cross died. Whereas the rich man was also in Hades, but in a realm called torment. Within Hades, within the realm of the unseen. And there's no passing back and forth between those two realms. You know, there's a doctrine of the Catholics that, except for the, well, I can't go into all the doctrine of the Catholics for sake of time. But for most folks, when you die, you go to a place where you have to have your remaining sins burned off. Purgatory, they call it. If you'll pray for people in purgatory, that helps them to get out of purgatory sooner. And if you'll pay the priest to pay for them, that helps a whole lot to get out sooner. And so it's pay and pray. And by the way, that's how St. Peter's Basilica was built. on that doctrine of purgatory, and also selling of indulgences, and lots of money on top of money on top of money coming into the coffers. Now that great big old St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. But at any rate, so they have a doctrine that when you die, if you're just a normal person, when you die, you go to purgatory. And your loved ones pray for you, and if they'll pay the priest, he'll pay for you. And eventually you get your sins burned off, and you pass out of purgatory, and you go to a different place that where you're, I guess, a heaven, where you're no longer being inflamed. Well, there's no passing from torment. Once you die, wherever you are, that's where you are. And that's where you stay until judgment day. And nothing is going to change that. In Luke chapter 16, verse 26, when the rich man asked Abraham to send Lazarus with just a drop of water to put on his tongue, Abraham said, "There's a great gulf fixed between us." And that means a great chasm. You know, Lynn and Janet saw the Grand Canyon. That's a great chasm, isn't it? It's a great gulf. And you imagine looking across there and say, can I jump across to the other side and jump from the south rim to the north rim or the north rim? I don't think so. That's not going to happen. Okay. And you're not going to go to the bottom and climb back up as far as that great gulf between torment and paradise. It's not going to happen. There's no passion. I don't care how many people pray for you. And by the way, it doesn't help anything to pray for the dead. That doesn't accomplish a thing in the world. Wherever they are, that's set. That's accomplished in this life. Nothing's going to change that. Cannot pass either from paradise to torment or from torment to paradise. It cannot be accomplished. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10, the Apostle Paul says, "For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in his body, according to what he has done, whether good or bad." Your judgment and my judgment is not going to be on the basis, did somebody pray for me after I died? Did somebody pay for me after I died? Your judgment and my judgment will be on the basis of, how did I live while in this life? When death occurs, then that settles it. While there's life, there's hope for those who are lost. But when death occurs, there's no more hope for someone who dies outside of Christ or for someone who dies without making their life right with Christ. And that's the reason we need to make our life right with Christ while still there's life. Now that's all I can tell you and speak with confidence from the Scriptures about the state of the dead at this time before Jesus comes again. Now, sometime later, I'll preach another sermon. It will be entitled, "When Jesus Returns, What's Going to Happen Then?" But what we've talked about now is, what about the dead after they die and before Christ returns? And what I've told you is everything that I know to tell you that I can confidently say, I can put my finger on the verse that teaches it, and this is the way it is. But the question we want to raise is, well, if I were to die tonight, I want to be like Ahithophel. I don't want to set my affairs in order and then go out and commit suicide, because then I've ensured that I'm not ready for death. My family may be ready for my death, but I'm not ready for my death. I don't want to be like Ahithophel. I don't want to be like the rich man that Jesus spoke of in Luke chapter 20, verses 20 and 21. That rich man, he was a rich farmer, and said, "I have many goods laid up for many years. I will take my ease and eat, drink, and be merry." And God said to him, "Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided?" If you were to die tonight, would God call you a fool for only having prepared, like Ahithophel, only preparing for here and now and not preparing for eternity? I want to be prepared. Oh, it's one thing to prepare for retirement. Now see, I'm 71, still working. That tells you I haven't prepared for retirement. I'm not overly worried about that. I'm worried about something a whole lot more important. I'm worried about being prepared for death. I want my family to be taken care of when I die. But even more than that, I want to be ready to meet my Maker. That's the main thing. Would you be in torment? In Hades, in the realm of torment? Or would you go and be with the Lord? In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 8, we'll end with this. Paul states the great confidence that we can have by being in Christ and being faithful in Christ. We're confident, yes, well pleased rather, to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. That is the great confidence and hope that you and I have, that I am ready to be absent from this body, knowing that when I'm absent from this body, I'm present with the Lord. If you need to make that preparation, we invite you to come while together we stand and while we